what's up? Welcome back to another episode of 200 and Counting. I'm your host, Tia Hill. So the last few documentaries that I've done episodes on, I think have been really, they've been kind of dark. They've been kind of heavy, I would say. This week's documentary, I wanted to do something a little less heavy. It's more of like a feel-good doc. I know the last few documentaries I've done have had pretty depressing conclusions, if we're being honest, but this week I want to do a documentary that's super short, actually. It's only 40 minutes long, and it's on Netflix if you want to take a little look-see. It's called The Long Shot.
There's 56,000 people at this game. How could you possibly be on camera?
I wasn't supposed to be at that game, and that would play in my head over and over.
I look for eyewitnesses and the tickets. I could not afford to miss anything.
All right, so I heard about this documentary from Twitter. Well, actually, I'd heard of the documentary before Twitter, but I didn't actually like go look for it until I saw it on Twitter. Basically, there is this tweet going around, multiple iterations of this tweet, of people being like, there's a scene from Curb Your Enthusiasm. So the scene itself has been going around on Twitter. And then someone quote tweeted it and they were like, it's crazy how this episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm helped clear a man in a murder case. And I was like, what? That's so crazy.
The seats ain't way the fuck up here.
You got a problem with
You said we had good seat club seats and shit. Way to fuck up. Shit.
Hey, there are a lot worse things you could be doing, you know.
Word out.
And everyone was like, yeah, it's called The Long Shot. It's on Netflix. And I was like, damn. Because I have tried watching this documentary before. It's been out for a few years now. I think it came out in 2017. And I tried watching it back then. And every single time I'd start watching this damn documentary, there was something about the beginning that I was like, this is so fucking boring. Like, I just couldn't get into it. Now, granted, this was only after reading like the one sentence they had describing it on Netflix. It's just like, this man was at a baseball game and somehow he's accused of murder and somehow a TV show, da 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 da. But it wasn't enough information to make me say, let me get through it. Once I learned it was Curb Your Enthusiasm, I was like, okay, that kind of changes things.
Who would think that Larry David, of all people, would save an innocent man from death row?
Now, for those of you who don't know, Curb Your Enthusiasm is a show on HBO starring Larry David. Larry David is a man who created Seinfeld. And I know people think that Seinfeld, I've talked to people before who have said that they don't think Seinfeld is funny. I think Seinfeld is hilarious. Well, not like knee slapping like, bah! But like, it is entertaining. You know, it's a hell of a lot more entertaining than Friends. Now that is a boring show. That's a boring ass show. My God. Larry David stars in Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's like most of it's improvised. It's so funny. Like just very dry humor. Larry David's just like going around, just like complaining about things. So once I found that out, I was like, what does this show have to do with this man getting off of death row? That is so crazy. The scene that was going viral on Twitter is Larry David sitting in the Dodgers stadium with a woman who is a sex worker.
I know you ain't looking around like you scared somebody gonna recognize you or some shit. You trying to act like you ain't with me?
No, I'm not trying to act like I'm not with you. What are you saying?
I will pull a titty out in this thing. I will pull a titty out.
Don't you dare do that.
I will act like you with me, dude.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
I was like, what does this have to do with a man being framed for murder? A man named Juan Ignacio Catalan, you know, they open with him talking to the camera, and this whole thing was filmed like a damn Aflac commercial. Like, it was just very, very overproduced. Not to immediately go in on the doc the minute I start talking about the synopsis, but I was just like, okay, I see what this is gonna be. Basically, Juan starts talking about how, you know, growing up, his brother used to steal things and he used to be the driver. And then he was like, I wanted that to be the last time that I was ever in jail. And I was like, okay, but I also thought it was interesting how, like, there's this documentary, no one really knows what it's about. And the first thing you're gonna do is you're gonna have this man of color talk about like the one bit of trouble that he's ever gotten in before this murder case. I think they could have done more to give us context about him as a person, maybe outside of the crime. I'd like to know about him. I think that would make me a little bit more, you know, that would get me more into it, and it would make it feel less overproduced and it would actually feel emotional. Maybe interview the man in his house or something like that. I don't know. You know, Juan was saying one day it was like a chill, normal day, and he had a dream that he was being taken by aliens, and then literally the next day he got arrested randomly, right? They're arresting him for murder. They thought he murdered a 16-year-old girl named Martha Puebla, who had testified in a case where his brother was the co-defendant. It was wild. One thing about this doc is they didn't really raise the stakes in the way that a lot of other ones do. I guess because going into it, you know that he's obviously innocent. I think in a lot of true crime documentaries, they love to leave you guessing, like, oh, but then on this Wednesday, he did one weird thing that maybe somebody who kills somebody might do. So what do you think? You know what I mean? They try to like get you going back and forth. And this one, it was just a straight shooter. It was like, here I am. minding my business, and they thought I murdered this girl, and I didn't.
It begins in 2003, when Catalan was arrested for murdering a 16-year-old girl. A witness claimed he was at the scene of the shooting, but Catalan was actually at an LA Dodgers game.
And one thing that really stood out to me was in the interrogation room, the detective said to him, okay, you didn't do it, convince us otherwise. And I was like, that is fucked up, because in a court of law, the burden of proof is on the prosecution, meaning the state has to convince the jury that the man is guilty, you're innocent until proven guilty. Now, of course, as we've learned from the last few episodes of the podcast, most of the systems in this country are broken.
We're brought up to think that, you know, the policemen are there to protect us. So, you know, just knowing that they're doing something they shouldn't, I mean, that changes everything.
He got a good lawyer. His name was Todd Melnick. And then they were back in business. Now, one thing that I really didn't like about this doc, I'm going to be honest with you, it was nothing to write home about. The story itself is interesting. It just felt like they tried too hard to drag it out. 10 minutes on YouTube would have sufficed, because they didn't tell us anything about Juan. They just spent all the time talking about, I don't even know, like just a lot of theatrics involved in this. He gets his good lawyer. Now, mind you, the Dodgers game part is revealed like 9 to 10 minutes in. And basically the lawyer is like doing all of his research. He's doing everything that he's supposed to be doing, looking into this case. And then he finds out that actually on the date in question, Juan was at a baseball game. He was at a Dodgers game with his daughter and one or two other people were there, like some friends were there. So then they were like, find the ticket. They couldn't find the ticket. Then they were like, find some receipts for something he bought. He paid for everything in cash and didn't get a receipt. That's one of those things where you think, oh my God, if that happened to me, do I have receipts from every single time I ever go somewhere? I throw away my receipts. Like, what if I need an alibi? The whole time I was like, man, if they had cell phones, this wouldn't be an issue, because he'd have a Snap story. He probably would have put up a Snap with a filter, and then that would have been that. But then I realized this happened in 2003. So I was like, they did have cell phones by then. Let me stop acting like that was the same period of time. I guess, you know, my memories started forming in like 2006. So my number one gripe about this, and I'm sorry, I haven't even gotten into like the meat of the plot. My number one gripe about this documentary is the fact that the story itself is super straightforward. Basically, all that happens is that he's at the Dodgers game and they need proof that he was there. They ultimately end up checking his cell phone records to say, okay, he made this call from outside Dodgers Stadium at, you know, 10:11. The murder took place at 10:20. He couldn't have possibly been there. But I'm like, that could have been literally the first thing they looked at. Instead, the documentary takes us down this long rabbit hole, twisting and turning, being like, we couldn't find the tickets. Then we were like, oh, what do we do about blah, blah, blah. It's like, just check the cell phone tower. Even I know that, and I'm not even a damn detective. But they don't do that, of course, until 30 minutes into it. They had to drag it out, give us the old razzle dazzle and make us shake in our little boots. You know, they drag it out. What's interesting is there's no frame of reference for the time limit of all of these. Like, they don't tell you, like, on day two of the trial, we found out such and such. They kind of intersperse footage from him in court with the lawyer talking about when he was like structuring his defense. So a lot of different elements to this. But the attorney, to his credit, good for Todd, he checked literally every single camera in that stadium, checked every single camera, couldn't find any footage of him. He was like, damn. And then Juan remembered that they were filming something that day. So Todd went down to the main desk of the Dodger Stadium and he was like, hey, I need to see your records to see what was being filmed on this day. He looks, he sees HBO. He was like, what's HBO? And then again, I was like, it's 2003. I know for a fact I was watching HBO kids shows in 2003. So I don't know why Todd didn't know what it was. But anyway, it was Curb Your Enthusiasm that was being filmed in the Dodger Stadium.
We were watching tape after tape after tape. And finally he showed up on tape number 5. Well, I jumped out of my chair and I pointed at the screen and I said, that's him. Roll that back.
Now at this point, I was like, wow, they have really dragged it out to get to this point. And that's what I mean. Like, I wonder how quickly Todd realized this is what I have to do. Because the way they were telling it, you would have thought this lasted months. But I honestly would not be surprised if in the course of like 3 days, Todd was like, then I'll do this. Oh, okay, cool. Not saying that it's not a very like gut-wrenching, I'm sure it was very, very anxiety-inducing, but the amount of like theatrics they did to draw this out, they also had everybody in makeup. Like, the way it was shot was on a seamless, so they're sitting just in front of like a light blue background. It's super, super intensely lit. You can tell everybody has makeup on, and because it looks so made up and because it looks so overproduced, I couldn't really take people's stories as seriously because it didn't seem as emotional. I think if Juan had been interviewed in his home, if his girlfriend had been interviewed in their home, you know, if he had been in a neighborhood, just somewhere that felt more personal, I think that I probably probably would have been like, wow, oh my God, this is so anxiety inducing. But instead, it was more like people were just giving a deposition with like some professional lighting. So anyway, they find out Curb Your Enthusiasm is filming at the Dodger Stadium. And at first they're like, no, we don't want to let them look at the footage. And then Larry David was like, it was exciting. I was like, sure. So this is season 4, episode 7, apparently. It's called The Carpool Lane. And Larry he's trying to get to this Dodgers game in time, but he wants to use the carpool lane, but you can't use a carpool lane if you only have one person in the car. So he ends up picking up a sex worker and being like, come on, you're going to Dodger Stadium. And she's like, okay.
Tell you the truth, what I'd really like to do is I want to go to Dodger Stadium and I want to go to the game and I'll pay you for your time.
You just want me to sit in the car?
Just sit in the car. That's all you have to do.
Oh, you a crazy son of a bitch. All right. We walk up in the baseball game and it's like a real game. I literally was like, how did you get all these people here?
So they're there and they're talking and yeah, that's the situation. And now I'm already at the climax of the film, and this was, I kid you not, this was like 25 minutes into it. I was like, this is just, I feel like I'm giving a book report. You know what I mean? But I felt the need to break it down because a lot of people had talked about it, and I want people to know, like, if you're gonna watch it on Netflix, you may as well just read the blurb you saw on Twitter and leave it at that, because that just is what it is. There's a moment in the episode where Larry has to get up from his seat, and he has to go say hi to someone else that he came to. I don't remember what it is, but he has to go say hi to someone, and the camera crew gets randomly assigned what aisle they're filming in. So mind you, this was like during the actual Dodgers game, during the real game. And they get up, Larry goes to talk to this man, and the camera happened to be right by where Juan was sitting. In fact, there is literally one moment in the show where Juan is going to his seat with his daughter. His daughter had asked for ice cream, so they had gotten ice cream, and as he's walking back to his seat, he crosses in front of the camera and literally like looks dead at Larry and then like goes and sits down in his seat. It was crazy. It was crazy. And so then there's the shot of Larry David walking up the stairs, and he was there on camera, and that proved it. That, combined with his cell phone records and the cell phone towers, proved that Juan did not commit that murder. Which is crazy.
The dominoes fell the wrong way, but then they all fell the right way. What if Juan had not gotten the Dodger tickets that day? What if Curb decided to film on a different day? What if the production assistant didn't allow Juan to walk by? What if the cameras weren't rolling at the time when Juan walked by? What if Melissa hadn't said, Dad, I'm hungry, I want some candy, and they walked up and then back in the 10 minutes they filmed that scene?
And the Dodger seating guy was like, listen, like, life is one big what if. You can't sit around doing what ifs. And I was like, thank you, sir, because I sure as hell do a lot of what ifs. But it was like a heavenly moment. I got chills, honestly, for all the stuff I will say about how this documentary was filmed and whatever. I got chills watching Juan go sit in his seat. I will tell you that, because it felt like one of those ethereal, like heavenly moments, like guardian angel type shit. You know what I mean? Like, you could see that was an act of God, which is genuinely very, very crazy to actually witness. So it is a very, very, very wild story. There was time code on the tape, so they knew exactly what time it took place. The murder was an hour and a half after that, but once again, they had the phone tower and he ended up walking free. He was a free man. So the story itself is interesting, right? It's like very hard. Heartwarming. But notice it did not take me long to tell you all that story, because there is not that much to it. And this is not to discount what Juan and his family have been through, because that honestly is wild. And I do think that they would need their story told. But I think this one is on the filmmakers more so than anything, because it's clear that to them, the most interesting part was the Curb Your Enthusiasm part, not like that this could have been a critique on the justice system. You know what I mean? Like, why were they telling him, convince us that you didn't murder that girl? That's a little troubling. You know what I mean? Let's look into the system that a neighbor had someone draw a composite sketch of Juan that didn't even really look like him. Like, there were all these other problematic elements that could have been expounded upon, but it was just like, nope, these are all steps to lead up to the crux of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Oh my God. You know what I mean? It was kind of made with like the interesting thing at the front and everybody else at the back. Juan's story seemed secondary to the fact that, you know, there was this like weird kind of mystery thing, which was very interesting. But I think the way that they told it in this documentary could have been done in 10 minutes and it could have gone on YouTube. Now, if they wanted to do a feature-length documentary, I think that they could have done more to talk about Juan, to talk about his upbringing, to talk about what it was like for him to go sit behind bars for something that he did not do. Not only something that he didn't do, but something that was so serious. He went to maximum security prison, and he says one blurb about it. He's like, you don't know fear until you hear a grown man scream for help. That is very disturbing, and Juan, honestly, I want to hear more. Like, I want to know more about him. him and his experience. That to me is an interesting thing. And it's just as interesting as the Curb Your Enthusiasm part. But I think because the storytelling with this direction was a little bit, the Curb Your Enthusiasm part became the most interesting thing. And the minute that's over, it's very apparent that there wasn't much to it. It seems like because that was the most interesting thing they had, and because they got Larry David in the dock, once they booked him, they were like, all right, we'll make the rest of it work. And that was that. Juan ends up getting $300,000 from the state as an apology, but I think the documentary itself was way too overproduced. It was shot like a commercial. I couldn't really take anyone seriously because it seemed like everyone was acting, even though they obviously weren't. Everyone looked like an actor. It looked like a bunch of testimonials, and it looked like the shots that they'd used for the documentary were like the fifth take of them getting someone to say something emotional, and they finally got them to say it in the polished way that they wanted them to. They got to the meat of the documentary way too damn late. I was clocked out. This is why I couldn't watch the whole thing the other times I've tried watching it, because it was so boring and I didn't know the Larry David thing. And so I was like, what are we talking about? Like, what? They did nothing to make this any more interesting than a regular true crime documentary. And because we have so many of them, unfortunately, that industry, I've a lot of thoughts about that separately, but because at this point there's a formula to just exploiting families' sad stories of, you know, true crime and being victims, it's like people aren't even really trying anymore. I think they could have done a lot more to tell Juan's story, like I said, to tell his family story, to just add like way, way, way more context. I was only interested to watch this once I found the Curb Your Enthusiasm thing. That should be enough to tell you, okay, maybe they should have done a little better with how they were laying things out. They give you no reason to care about Juan. They give you no context into his early life or of his regular life or about his family, his daughter, like just nothing there. They could have talked to more people. They could have done a little more. It was a documentary short. I will say they billed it as that. I appreciate that they stayed in their lane, because I'm always saying something could have been shorter. This was 40 minutes. I'm like, let's whittle it down to 10. I do appreciate that they stayed in their lane. They didn't try to drag this out and make it an hour and a half. They just left it at 40 minutes. It was like a nice bite-sized documentary. I think if you're just looking for something to be like, wow, isn't that something? This is that documentary. I was like, okay, and that is that. You know what I mean? It's truly only about that moment in time, that one moment in time where he's on the tape. That's what this documentary is really about. It's not about him. It's not about Curb. It's about that specific moment in time, which for a documentary short, you know what? They stayed in their lane and I appreciate that. So I can't even hate. But overall, I'm gonna have to give it 3 stars. 3 stars, maybe even 2.5 if I'm being honest with you. 2.5, 2.5, 2.5. While I do think that moment in time is interesting, while I do want this man's story to be told, maybe this is just me inserting myself as a director, but I want it to be told from the guise of, they wrongly arrested me. Let's talk about how messed up that is. And I had to thankfully have this miracle occur for me to get out of prison, rather than, wow, isn't it crazy how Larry David saved this man? Which is crazy, but I think that in itself can be, that could be a story you tell at a party. That's what Larry David said, and it could have been left as that. So I just don't really think that this is needed to be a documentary, but I'm glad that it's a short. I think it's interesting, but I think there's just way more interesting ways to tell the story that they had to tell, and I just wasn't really into it. It kind of felt like I was just waiting for them to get to the point, you know? 15 minutes in, like, please just get to the point. What are you dragging out? It was shot like a commercial. It felt very impersonal. Everyone felt like an actor, even though I know that they weren't. And once you know the plot, you know the story. He was in some Curb Your Enthusiasm footage, and that's how he got off. It's basically the story. They don't even add anything else to be like, and this happened. Nope, that was just it. So 2.5 stars. I mean, I'll say they had some really, like, they must have had a great budget for cameras, because everybody looked really good. So I guess that's where the 0.5 stars comes from. But yeah. I mean, give it a watch. If you've seen it on Twitter, you know, give it a little look-see. May as well. It's something to do, you know? Am I right? But as usual, thank you all so much for listening. If you have any documentary recommendations, please slide them my way. And also feel free to leave like a little review, you know? Let me know what you think. Leave a review, leave a rating, and I appreciate you listening. As always, thanks so much, and I will see you on the next episode.